Welcome to Ratchet & Wrench Radio, an Endeavor Business Media podcast, bringing you strategies and inspiration for auto care success, featuring the voices of shop owners, thought leaders, and influencers from around the auto care industry. Today, my guest is Mike Allen, owner of CarFix, who has shops in and around the greater Raleigh, North Carolina area. Today, Mike and I are going to be talking about the value of good hiring and retention practices. Mike's going to break down what he does and why it's successful for his shop and what you can learn from them today. So we'll talk to Mike after this quick message. Psst, hey, you. Yeah, you. Can I tell you how fired up I am about the 2024 Ratchet & Wrench Management Conference happening September 12th through the 14th at the Renaissance Orlando at SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida? That's right. Our theme this year, powering your shop, fueling the fun. When you register at rwconference.com, you'll join industry leaders for an exclusive business building conference for auto repair shop owners, operators, and managers. This year, it's a new location. It's a new format, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun. We've got over 30 strategy sessions. We've got roundtables. We've got keynotes. And best of all, we've got lots of valuable networking to put you in proximity of some of the industry's leading operators so you can soak in their knowledge. RWConference.com to register, and I'll see you in Orlando. And now, on to our guest. Well, hey, Mike, welcome to Ratchet & Wrench Radio.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, good to have you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about your shop.
So again, my name is Mike Allen. The name of my business is CarFix. We're a full-service auto repair and maintenance in and around Raleigh, North Carolina. We've got three locations. We're in our 19th year since we opened our first store. Second store was opened in 19, right before the pandemic hit, and then third store in 21. But it's been my family's blood for three generations. 1937, my grandfather opened his. It was general store, auto repair, feedlot, social center of the community, the whole deal, like the typical small town gas station service shop, right? So dad grew up in that business. He went away to college. He had some other things. He got pulled back into the industry, and he ended up buying a business in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, in the early 80s. And that's the one that I grew up in. And I went away to college and did some other things and ended up coming back into the business. And then CarFix was born or became a thing, I guess, in late 2004, early 2005. And the rest is history. So,
wow. 1950s. Sometimes I like to mentally like romanticize those years past, you know, like, man, what was life like back then? You know, like the slower pace, the differences in technology, kind of how people responded to stimuli back then as opposed to how we do now.
I've got a picture of my grandfather out in front of his shop, and there's some ramps in the background where there's a Model T, and in the foreground, he's standing next to a horse and buggy where he's working on the axle on a buggy. So
unreal.
Just farm country in the 30s, right? So
I mean, it's crazy. We're about 100 years far removed from, you know, just cars being more mass produced than they were in the beginning. So I mean, it's still, for the most part, it's still a new technology in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, your shop, you know, you have a really interesting way of, you know, recruiting and retaining technicians. But before we dive into that, I just want to ask you kind of what your posture is on the idea of a technician shortage. Some people say that we're having this big wave of technician shortage. And of course, the numbers and data do support. But at the same time, you know, there are others who say, well, it's really not so much a shortage per se, but more of just, hey, we've got some culture things to fix, some leadership things to fix within the shop that will keep people, you know, gainfully employed and happy where they are if we can fix those things within ourselves. What's your position?
So there's no doubt that there is a shortage, right? There are more seats available than there are butts to put in those seats, right? That being said, businesses that have a really strong, good culture, that are really aggressive in their recruiting, that compensate well, that give great benefits, most of them aren't struggling to get quality employees. It's the shops that are stuck in the 1930s or the 1980s or, you know, the 1990s, whatever it might be. Those shops are the ones that I find are most commonly struggling. They're not compensating in a way that keeps up with the evolution of the industry. They're not providing high level benefits. They're not providing a facility that is going to attract the best. It's easier said than done, you know, but you can make incremental improvements over weeks and months and years to build your facility out in a way that will attract quality individuals or, you know, get the training you need and the skills you need to be able to charge what you need to be able to charge to provide benefits and to provide competitive pay. Because we're not just competing with other shops, right? We're competing with other industries. We're losing our best talent to aerospace and to other trades and going back to school, right? So yeah, I was on the phone with a young man earlier this week who was a technician for 5 years. He never really got much higher than a GS level technician because he was in places that had, you know, bad cultures that, that didn't treat him well. He had to pay to go to training is one of the things that he said, not take vacation to go to training. He had to pay for the tuition to go to training. So, I mean, it was just, you know, things like that. He left and went to work in the oil field, right? Gets his own truck, you know, doesn't have to bring any equipment, gets training, makes way better money. So we're going to continue to have a brain drain of the young people that are coming into the industry if we continue to provide a bad environment. So,
yeah. So tell us, you know, how did you kind of come to that conviction? You know, I know for shop owners, it takes a while of just observing and seeing just how things go, even within their own environments. But when did that dawn on you that, man, we've got to look at this culture thing if we're going to retain people and keep them in the shop and keep them happy?
Well, so culture is a buzzword that everybody wants to talk about their shop culture, right? And to a degree, I roll my eyes a little bit about that. But it is the golden rule, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. Don't be mean, you know, treat people with respect. If that is building a good culture, then just, you know, be a decent human being to yourself and to others. But I think there were two things that played highly into kind of my evolution in that capacity. One of them is my father was already invested in having a business coach when I was coming up and watching his business development. And so I already knew a coach by the time I matured enough to care about anything other than being a service advisor, right? And so that kind of put me a little bit ahead of the curve, and I'm very fortunate for that. And the other thing was my involvement in the Automotive Service Tire Alliance. It wasn't called that at the time. It was two previous associations, the Independent Garage Owners and the North Carolina Tire Dealers. And we merged 3 years ago to become the Automotive Service and Tire Alliance. And the networking and the relationships that were built from those events, and also the focus on training right in North Carolina in our backyard, really helped me get exposed to a lot of forward-thinking businessmen and shop owners, probably at a higher pace and a higher rate than the average small business owner. So I benefited from that as well.
Okay. So talk to us about your, you know, hiring process. What does that look like?
So a few years ago, kind of at the beginning of the, you know, real shortage talk when it became the buzz was the technician shortage, right? My 20 group that I'm a part of, there was an assignment is what are we going to do to get ahead of this? And how are we going to be different than everyone else in order to not suffer the consequences of what's coming, right? And it was not popular, the presentation that I brought to the 20 group, right? Because I said, this is about speed. You know, we've developed over the last 20 years, we've, you know, been getting coached up on how we need to have a personality profile test, and we need to do three different interviews, and we need to take them to dinner with our spouse, and we need to, you know, learn all about them. And I get it, right? I want to know the ins and outs of all of my people. But in this hiring environment, if I try to go through that process, they're going to get hired four times by four other people before I ever have a chance to go through that process. And so I came to the presentation and I said, you know, and I've learned from a couple of different coaches and integrated different pieces, into what we're doing, but it's, if they're going to respond to an ad or if they're going to update their resume, it's because they're ready right now. Something has happened in their life that has got them looking. They're firing their current shop, right? So we're going to strike while the iron's hot. We're going to move fast. So if they've updated their resume today, I'm going to email them today. If they submitted a resume to a job posting right now, I'm going to call them back the minute I see the resume. My ideal is to, I want to break bread in some capacity. I want to have breakfast in the morning or coffee. I want to have lunch. I want to take them to dinner, like 12 hours or less, right? The next meal after they've submitted interest. Strike while the iron's hot, right? Find out what their pain point is that's got them looking. When I come to that meal, I'm going to have a complete hiring packet. I'm going to have the benefits of working with Carfix and the outline of our literal compensation and benefits. I'm going to have the questions that the spouse always asks when they get home, but they forgot to ask me. I've got them all written out and answered so they can take that home with them and answer those questions. You know, build out a hiring page on your website that's got interviews with technicians and advisors and spouses of technicians and advisors. Obviously, an interview with the owner, you know, or whomever their direct report's going to be. Try to illustrate for them what it's like to work for your company. So, you know, they sent an email this morning. We're having lunch. You know, I drove out to wherever they're working now and picked them up or met them at the nearest restaurant. And they're checking the right boxes, right? There's no immediate red flags. And you've got, you know, what those red flag questions are going to be for you or for any other business. And so there's no red flags. They seem to have the right attitude, the right aptitude. This person might be a player on our team, right? I'm going to make them a job offer right there immediately. I've already got the offer letter. I fill in the blanks on compensation. Pay them however they want to be paid. You know, if you're talking to a technician and they want flat rate, pay them flat rate. They want salary, pay them salary. If they want hourly plus bonus, do that. Whatever, however they want to be paid, pay them that way and set clear expectations on performance to justify that pay, right? I'm not going to get into the weeds fighting about flat rate is the devil. I'm not going to get into the weeds talking about everybody should be salary with no performance-based bonus, whatever. I'm going to, if it's a key player, if they're a strong operator, I want them on my team. I'm going to hire them. And so, you know, not only that, I'm then going to return back. If they are interested in the job is available this afternoon. You know, we're at lunch. I'll help you move your box right now. We'll call a tow truck or bring your box tomorrow or whatever it might be. If you need to work 2 weeks, I understand. No worries. I respect that. But I don't ever give somebody 2 weeks notice when I'm terminating their employment. And so I think there's a little bit of a double standard that we employers, I say we because I'm an employer, have ingrained into the working public that they owe us 2 weeks. We don't give them 2 weeks when we fire them. Now, I don't think a technician should walk out in the middle of a 16-hour job, right? I think that's poor form. I don't think a service advisor should walk out and not update their the business they work at on all the open tickets they have or any special situations they have. But there's no reason that you can't finish your day and move. And so I'm going to incentivize with a bonus if they move tomorrow. Because if you don't, what's going to happen? Change is scary. They're going to spend, and if you're a shop owner and you're listening to this conversation, you have experienced this in your life. You have had your accepted job offer used as leverage for that individual to get a significant raise and promises of it'll change, we'll be better, we won't keep doing the thing that you hate. And then they no-show or they stay at the place that they're at. So what you're doing is you're giving them 2 weeks for the other guy to undermine you and to convince that person that they're not going to be the evil person that they were, right, in the interview, the things that they said why they're leaving. It's 2 weeks for you to lose that recruit. I want them tomorrow. What does it cost me to have an unproductive bay for 2 weeks? It cost me a lot of money. So why not just take that money and give it to the dude to come to work tomorrow?
That's thorough and fast. But I get it though. I get the need, like just how you'd want to get someone to move at a rapid rate. Like you said, you kill that decision fatigue that they spend days, tossing and turning and wondering if they're making the right decision. Like you said, you kill that opportunity for the employer to match or exceed what you've given them. And you can kind of put them on the spot to make a choice.
And I feel like, you know, let's say, you know, I'm going to speak in, you know, ridiculous numbers because every market is different. Let's say that this guy's making $100 an hour and I offer him 120 an hour and he goes back and the boss says, I'll give you 125. Well, for how long was 125 an opportunity that boss didn't give him, right? So, right. But again, change is scary and you're going into an unknown, and I get it, which is why I don't want to give that dude's former boss 2 weeks to talk him out of making the best decision of his life.
Yeah. So what's the reaction like, you know, whenever you sit down with somebody or, you know, when you make the call back so quickly, when you schedule the time to sit down and have a meal or coffee with them, and then you actually have everything laid out in front of them, like, because I'm sure that's like completely like foreign to them to see something like that. Like, what's their reaction typically like?
So some of them are surprised. Some of them think it's great. Some of them are very cautious. They think, well, you know, they have their guard up, right? Because they've been hurt, because our industry treats people badly. You know, the people who read your magazine are not, on the whole, are not the people that treat people badly, right? But the people who read your magazine are a small fraction of the trade as a whole. I wish that they all would, because then they'd learn, right? A rising tide floats all boats. But so anytime something feels too good to be true, it's human nature to think, where's the catch? What's wrong? So there's some people that I've got like, no, this is for real, man. You know, Google us, call around, you know, come to the shop. You can walk around and talk to the guys at the shop, right? If they don't want to get together for a meal and they've got a day off or time available, I'll just invite them to the shop and let them hang out, you know. But again, I want to do it as quickly as possible, strike while the iron's hot. And if their next day off's not till next week, I'm not waiting until next week.
Yeah.
So, ooh.
Tell me about the spouse question. That's interesting. You know, where did the concept of coming up with the spouse questions come from?
This part of that project with my coaching group, my 20 group, a few years ago was, what are the things that, we should have in our hiring packet? And, you know, well, you know, the spouse always asks what the insurance costs, or do you have dental and vision because their kid needs glasses or whatever it might be. And I know that I don't ask those probing questions when I'm having, you know, I'll be having a conversation with my wife. Say, hey, have you talked to your dad today? Yeah, I talked to him for like an hour today. Well, how's your mom doing? I don't know. How was their trip last weekend? I don't know. What did you talk about for an hour? We talked about work. so, you know, a lot of folks tend to focus on the work stuff and not get into the other things. So we try to provide the answers for the questions that they most commonly call back or text back to ask. Just go ahead and have those answers ready. It's just like if you're a service advisor and you are calling a client to sell an estimate, you need to be prepared for the questions they're most likely to ask and answer those questions for them before they get the chance to ask them. It's part of your job as a service advisor. Well, I'm not a service advisor anymore. I'm a recruiter. I set the company goals. I recruit, I hire, I train. I need to be prepared to answer the questions of the recruits before they ask them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
No, it makes total sense. And something else you said that I was very curious about was the pay plans, like the diversity in the pay plans. How did you come up with that and how has it worked out?
It was fatigue and the constant online bickering about what pay plan is good and what pay plan is bad. And, you know, some of my dearest friends are some of the loudest, most vocal opponents to, you know, the great Satan that is flat rate and all the other things. I was like, guys, so you're telling me that if a rock star world-class technician walks into your shop and says, I want to work flat rate because I know I'm going to make an enormous amount of money working flat rate, you're going to pass on that dude because you believe that flat rate is evil? Good. Send him to me. Right? So no pay plan is evil. They're inanimate. Each pay plan has a weakness. Understand those weaknesses, understand the benefits of each pay plan, and adjust your expectations and your levels of performance that you require based upon those plans. If you want to make a salary of $1 million a year working at Carfix, and I believe that you're going to generate enough to justify that, okay, but there's going to be a very high level of expectation, and there's going to be a very short leash when you fail to make that expectation. If you want to be pure flat rate with no guaranteed minimum, I've got enough bays. Okay, if you underperform, I'm gonna allow more occurrence of underperformance because I don't need the bay space as badly. I got 13 bays and 6 technicians, right? Then I'm gonna have a little more tolerance of being just okay. So if I think that an individual is going to make the team, is going to be a strong player, is going to be an asset to the organization, is going to be a team player, then I'm going to pay them how they want to be paid. And I'm just going to clearly explain the expectations and make sure they understand it and follow up with them regularly and move on.
All right. So on the other side of the coin is just with the retention side. Like, how are you, you know, keeping people in the shop?
Well, so retention is, there are a lot of things that go into that, right? You need, some of them are similar to attraction, right? Is you got to have a facility that is clean and well lit and well maintained. You got to have equipment that is safe and well maintained and functional, you know, specialty tooling and that kind of thing. But you also want really high level benefits. You know, you want 401k with company match. You want to pay for 100% of their health insurance and their dental and their vision. You want to have life insurance. You want to have, you know, continuing education that's paid. You know, we want to build a benefits and compensation package that is competitive, not just in our field. It should be dominant in our field, but it should be competitive against those industries that we're losing people to. That's part of it. And then, you know, perks are nice. You know, we provide a tool truck stipend for technicians that maintain their ASE master certification. We provide work boots. We provide gloves. Every 5 years, you get an extra week of paid vacation and $5,000 to spend on a vacation. You have to take a vacation. You can't just stay home. You have to spend the $5,000 on the vacation. Bring me receipts. I'll write you a check, right? So we have people that have gone to the Mediterranean, gone on cruises, gone to the beach, gone to NASCAR races, gone to Nashville. So it's really cool to see the types of things that they do when they get the opportunity to do that. And they might not have otherwise ever taken a trip like that because they're too frugal or they just don't have the opportunity. Right. So it's fun.
That's really cool though. The trips, like just, you know, that would get me to stay for sure. I want to hit my 5 years so I can go somewhere really cool.
It's been four and a half years and I'm ready to retire, but I'm going to stick around for another 6 months.
Yeah, I'm going to make it work. Now, something cool that you do that we talked about before, and I'd love for you to talk about is, like, you know, you talk about continuing education, and that continuing education does not have to be related to the position. Like, you allow them to take cooking classes, do stuff they want to do. Like, talk about that a little bit, because I thought, you know, that was really different and really kind of neat.
Yeah. So every year you get at least 40 hours of paid training. And after you've completed 2 cycles of 40 years, you're open to personal development training, right? So some people have taken financial management courses. Some people have had basic life support courses they've taken. We've had like my operations manager, he started off as a technician and became a shop foreman and was being groomed to be a store manager. And he was technically super sound, but he wasn't yet super comfortable with his interpersonal communication skills, right? So we sent him to the 8-week Dale Carnegie communication class, and it just revolutionized his communication style. And he learned that there are different types of communication and that what works for one person might not work for another. And you need to be intentional about how you do that. And so he immediately moved up to a store manager level, and now he's over all 3 stores. So, you know, those types of things, you just want to enrich your people. You know, you want them to be better for their time with you. So.
Yeah. So what do you enjoy most about, you know, leading the people that you have? You know, you've found these guys, you know, you've brought them in, you've given them great offers, you've given them great benefits, you know, they've been around the shop. Like, what do you enjoy the most about it?
I'm learning that, you know, I said earlier, my job is to set goals, is to recruit and hire and train, and then everything else I kind of delegate, right? I'm learning that I really like being a cheerleader. I like winning and like celebrating the wins with them and helping them get to those wins. You know, somebody's struggling with this. Well, what are we going to do differently? Let's game plan this. Let's go at it from a different angle. And kind of teaching along the way as we go, you know, that whole situation went off the rails. First, let's fix the situation and then let's debrief and see why it went off the rails and what can we do differently next time to keep it from going off the rails. Should we change one of our processes, or, you know, should we have seen the red flags coming beforehand, you know, whatever it might be. So I like the constant sharpening of our skill set, right? So we have a morning huddle every morning at 7:15 and the whole team gets together and it's just 15 minutes, but it's talking about the core tenets of how we do what we do in our systems and our processes, or breaking down a win from yesterday or a struggle from yesterday or whatever it might be. But 15 minutes every day, that adds up, and it adds up to a lot of knocking it out of the park. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on Ratchet and Wrench Radio, Mike.
Absolutely. Happy to have been here.
Yep. Appreciate your time, and continue to do great things, whether at the shop or with ASTA.
Thanks.
And that's going to do it for us here today at Ratchet and Wrench Radio. I'd like to invite you to follow us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as subscribe to our email newsletter, which goes out daily. And you can find that at ratchetandwrench.com. And that's ratchetandwrench.com. And may the rest of your day be the best of your day. And we'll see you next week.